this is a matter that the SNC will issue. You know, I found it like that, and then we tried to spot out the previous CEO issues and the hiring of the new CEO and made the members who do not see. I should inform the members that we have gone out to interview for the position, full-time position of CEO. We advertised, we followed the process, we interviewed them, we, you know, took them through the basis in terms of to test their capabilities and skills, and all that we used as independent companies to do that, who then reported to us and gave it to us in writing and said, these are the five who are the strongest that we could consider. And this we did almost a month and a half ago. However, where we are right now is that we've given these five names to the National Intelligence Authority. I think it's called ready to make sure that we do not appoint people who say they are not.
So that's really where we are. So as soon as we get a report, if we get a report today, Chairperson, tomorrow we will make an appointment. So we kind of waiting for those processes. So hopefully, Chairperson, the next time we report, we'll be having a confirmed or a new CEO in place. So we've done it. We just wait. Now, coming back to the activities of the board, you know, in February before I joined, there was a board governance workshop that was done by KPMG and in conjunction with Public Works. So I don't know too much about that. However, in March, the very first week when I was appointed, I attended the National Stakeholder Forum. I think some of the members sitting here were there in Pretoria, I think. And thank you very much for being there to support this course. And in April, the board conducted its performance assessment of the committees. In other words, we wanted to know what is it that different individual board members bring to the board so that we can put the right people in the right committees to create a better organization going forward. So that was done by Grant Thornton. They gave us a very good view in terms of that. Now, we've now since, as a result of that assessment, I've now reshuffled the board committees which the acting CEO will talk about to make it more effective, but also the focus of these committees to be in line with the charters around corporate governance. In June, and between June and August, the board embarked on a strategic planning session. It took about 2 or 3 days of really intensive work. And at the end of the day, we came up with four focus areas. We said, the CIDB, we really want to focus on regulation, we want to focus on issues of development, we want to focus on transformation, we also want to focus on partnerships. And this is all to deliver a high-performance organization. And in that, we identified that we have to do certain particular activities to underpin the four pillars. One of them is that we are going to have to digitalize our services. I think some of the members who are closer to construction companies would know that, you know, this whole thing of registering construction is very much paper-based. So we want to change that, so that it becomes digitalized. And as you do that, you limit the number of fingers into the process. In other words, you limit the number of people who can change certificates and change this and all this. So we really want to make sure that the process is very clean. And also, the issue of sound corporate governance, we are going to make sure that this business is run in a clean way. But also what we found out that is critical as a board is that we want to have knowledgeable and influential team In other words, people who work within the CITB, in the CITB, they have to be knowledgeable and influential in terms of the industry. Because really at the end of the day, in our job to be effective in the industry. We also, to support the revised strategy, the board currently is embarked on an organizational redesign. So we are redesigning the whole business of CIDP, not only in terms of strategy, but also in terms of structures, in terms of placing. Now I'm coming to the staff. Placing the right people in the right positions in order to deliver a high-performance organization. So we are focusing on service delivery model. The skills audit, we base with that. So that the right people should occupy the right positions, the competency framework. This will inform the competency assessment at all levels. The training strategy, because it's all very well to expect people to do the work. If they really, there are some, you know, gaps in terms of skills, we are going to come to the party to try and help our staff to be better trained to become knowledgeable and influential team, to be part of the influential team. So we've got a remuneration strategy as well to underpin that. The revised job evaluation and job grading system. Now, this is a difficult thing to do. Because it means we're going to have to revise the jobs that certain people are doing and we're going to move people around. And this we are very determined to do. So that we come up with an organization that is very effective. And then, of course, this is all we're doing it to enhance the, and then we'll enhance the management systems at an IT level and so on. Now, from end of July to current, it's been quite hectic and busy. We have hosted the provincial stakeholders' license meetings. And I say where we're coming from. I have said to the board members and staff, unless you really go down to the level of where these people are, where they are operating, and hear from them directly, what are their issues? What is it that we can do as a CIDB to partner with them at that level? You really have no idea what you're talking about. You could sit in Pretoria and theorize and, you know, so I've said no. We are going out there and talk to these people. So we've done that. So we had meetings in Gauteng. We have had meetings in Free State, in Limpopo, in Northwest, in KwaZulu-Natal, in Mpumalanga, in the Eastern Cape. The upcoming meetings would be, one would be on Friday here in the Western Cape, and on Monday in the Northern Cape. The results of these consultations are that the meetings are really targeted at contractors at all levels. In other words, big and small. The clients, departments, and local government. The main common issues that are coming across from these provinces is that people are very unhappy with the registration process. And all the issues around registration is a CITB. So we'll be busy going to have to fix that. The matter of downgrading. It's an issue that is quite an issue, and as a matter of fact, we are going to suspend downgrading and look at the best effective way of helping these people grow from lower levels to higher levels. We cannot do otherwise but do that. So we've done that. The late payment issues are a big issue for small companies. If I were to be critical a little bit, particularly in terms of municipalities and certain government departments, you know, I personally, honorable members, I've run small businesses and I still do. I know what it means to be paid late, Jefferson. It can stand between you, success and failure in your business, particularly when you discharge your responsibilities. It cannot be accepted that you don't have to be paid. So these are coming up very strongly and the temperature is very high out there around these matters. The matters of access to finance and work opportunities are a big issue. The subcontracting relationship between small and big companies is a huge matter of conflict that is coming up. Huge. Because oil companies don't always understand the framework and the legal basis of contracting to a big company. They take advantage of that you get paid on time and all that, and then it affects their grading at the end of the day. So we hear this directly from contractors themselves. And it's been a very good and instructive session. But I must point out to honorable members here that depending on which province, the temperatures are very high. The manner in which people are raising these issues is sometimes very emotional, and one has to be very mature to try and calm people and say, let's focus on the matters at hand. Because, you know, by and large, we're talking business here at the end of the day. The matters of corruption, the matters of this and this and that, they all come to the pot. As the KGB ourselves, there's not much we can do about it. Because we are really regulators and registrars. So all that we can do is to listen and focus on the things that we have discussed that we focus on. Chairperson, thank you. I'll ask my acting CEO to proceed. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, Chairperson of the Board, the DG, my colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Okay, in terms of the brief that we got for today's meeting, is to briefly give progress regarding governance matters at the CIGB. So I'll start with slide 13, which captures the summary of our mandate as the CIDB, and that is basically to provide a strategic leadership to construction industry stakeholders, promote sustainable growth of the construction industry and participation of the emerging sectors, promote improved performance and best practices of public and private sector clients, contractors and other participants in the construction delivery process, promote uniform application of policy throughout all spheres of government and promote uniform and ethical standards, construction, procurement reform, and improve procurement and delivery management, including the code of conduct. And lastly, it is to monitor and regulate the performance of the industry and stakeholders, including the registration of projects as well as contractors. So the chairperson mentioned the fact that the board embarked on a strategic review session, and these sections of our mandate, they basically underpinned the discussions at the strategic planning session, and you will see in terms of how then the different pillars in terms of the key focus areas, the four key focus areas were developed, they emanated directly from the mandate. So if I then go to slide 15, which deals about the accounting authority of the CIGB, which is basically the board. The board is appointed in terms of the CIGB Act number 38 of 2000, where the minister appoints a board who acts as the accounting authority, and they are tasked with the responsibility of overseeing the operations of the CIDB. The board that we have currently consists of 15 members, and in terms of the Act, it should be members that are not fewer than 9, but also not more than 13, and we currently have a full board in terms of composition, 13 members. The term of office of our board is 3 years, so the current board term officially started on the 1st of August 2014, which means it will therefore end on the 31st of July 2017. That's when the three-year period ends. And the Act provides for board members to not serve for more than 2 consecutive terms unless the minister considers it necessary to reappoint a member for reasons of continuity or maybe specific expertise. A third of the board members must be reappointed, and this is in terms of the Act. slide 16, if I just continue on the issues around the board. The current board is structured as follows. We have the chairperson of the board, and we currently have four committees of the board, and the four committees, two of them are statutory committees, which is the Audit and Risk and the Remuneration Committee, and two of them are core function committees. One is on issues around social and ethics as well as the core programs committee. These committees are chaired by members of the board, and then the rest of the members then sit in various committees of the board. Slide 17. Out of the 13 members of the board, the individual terms of office that we have is we have three of them that are on their second term, which means at the end of the period, which is next year, they will not be eligible for reappointment in the board. And then we have one board member who is a representative of Public Works, the shareholder, and she is also on her second term. And the rest of the members, including the chairperson, are all on their first term of office in the board. So the chairperson mentioned the fact that the board embarked on a strategic planning process, and the board basically looked at the five-year plan that was approved in 2014 and considered it necessary to review some of the matters that are contained in the plan so that we are able to enhance how we have planned our strategies and how we are going to respond to some of the issues that are facing the industry. So in those particular sessions, the board had to then relook at the vision, the mission, and the values of the CIEB, and then come up with strategies of how we are going to deal with those issues as highlighted in terms of our mandate and in terms of what is really the issues around the industry that are within the mandate of the CIDB. And that's how then the board came up with the four pillars, which is the regulations, development, transformation, as well as the issue of partnerships. And focusing on the vision of the CIDB was to then look at the goals, the strategic goals and the objectives of the various goals. And the main focus in terms of the strategic review planning process was to focus on issues of impact in terms of the different goals and in terms of the various strategies. What kind of impact are we actually making out there in the economy and in the industry that we operate in? So we had to look at the outcome as well and then go back and assess the status quo in terms of what are we currently doing and how has it changed things and how can we better perform going forward. So we had to, in terms of analyzing the situational analysis and looking at the status quo, was to look at the various initiatives that CIDB currently has in place. So slide 21 basically gives you the summary then of the new strategy, which we will obviously unpack as soon as the new strategy and the APP is approved at the end of the cycle. So what we are just sharing for now is what the board, the focus of the board in terms of the reviewed strategy. And we are then giving just a tripod which articulates how the board is approaching issues of transformation, because transformation was identified as the key issue around what CIDB needs to input in. So if one then looks at the new vision that the board came up with, which looks at a transformed construction industry that is inclusive, ethical, and contributes to a prosperous South Africa and the world. So the key issues there are issues around inclusivity, just making sure that everyone is included in the industry in terms of the initiatives and the plans and the strategies that CIDB comes up with. You also recall that the chairperson mentioned that in March the board hosted the National Stakeholder Forum, and the key theme for the forum was on issues of transformation in the industry. Issues of ethics obviously came up around some of the concerns that are facing this industry, the collusion issues, and just pure corruption that goes on and that is raised with us as the CIDB, and the kind of matters that are raised with us as the CIDB in terms of our investigative role in the industry. So what then sits at the top of this transformation tripod or the transformation strategy for CIDB is to look at an inclusive growing economy or an inclusive growing industry, because we feel that the construction industry is one of the biggest industries that will basically improve the economy of this country, hence we then need to focus on issues of transformation. And focusing on issues of transformation, we're looking at making sure that we come up with strategies that will assist us to have a transformed construction industry. And on issues of development, it's to look at innovative ideas for a thriving construction environment. We have a country that is rapidly changing in terms of how things are being done and what is happening around us, and it means CIDB also has to look at some of these issues of how we are going to develop contractors, develop the industry in general to make sure that there is one that is inclusive and one that focuses on contributing to a prosperous South Africa. And at the center of this are issues around regulation. And we identify matters around making sure that the initiatives that we put in place as the CIDB, they put us as the CIDB at the center of the transformation agenda to be seen and to behave as a reputable regulator. And this was identified as a key matter in the sense that if one of our pillars in terms of our strategic focus area is going to be partnerships, it therefore goes without saying that we have to be seen as a reputable regulator so that the strategic partner that we approach to partner with us in terms of improving and informing the transformation agenda in this industry, they don't have two ways to think about whether to partner with us or not. So it is important, and hence the issues of an ethical entity was at the center of our vision and our strategy as well. And underpinning all of this, the board also identified that we need a high performance organization to be able to deliver on this part. And in that high performance organization is to focus on issues around one of our key deliverables as the CIDB, which deals with registration matters, is to look at digitalized services so that we keep up with the changes in terms of how things are done, how business is done, and to make it conducive for stakeholders in the industry to be able to do business with us. And we said also underpinning this high performance organization is to look at issues of having a sound financial governance in terms of all the governance matters that we have as the CIDB. We still need to make sure that they are sound and that there is continuity in terms of how we just manage our financial resources and related matters in as they relate to governance issues. And lastly, which is also a process that we are doing parallel to the review of the strategy, is the organizational redesign process. And the board has looked at this and said a knowledgeable and an influential team is needed to be able to carry the new strategy forward. Hence, we then identified the high-performance organization and one that will take the business of the CIDB and start focusing on the real issues that are really bothering this industry. And the mission therefore, in terms of how we're going to deliver on this new vision, is the fact that we need to regulate and develop construction industry through strategic interventions as well as partnerships. Because we acknowledge the fact that CIDB cannot do this on their own. We need strategic partners and strategic interventions for us to be able to deliver on the mandate of the CIDB and to transform the construction industry. So some of the values that were therefore identified to be able to carry this transformation agenda and the new focus in terms of what the CIDB was focusing on are values such as responsiveness, how we respond, and the rate of our responsiveness in terms of how we deal with our stakeholders, issues of efficiency, effectiveness, innovation, ethical approaches, accessibility, as well as being agile. So that then gives you the summary in terms of the approach that the board took in the recent discussions around the strategic conversations that we've had. Around the issues of the review of board committees, the chairperson also mentioned that in May, we also finalized the performance assessment of both the board as well as all its committees, which was undertaken by Grant Thornton, following the governance workshop that was held by KPMG, which we did in conjunction with the Department of Public Works. And emanating from the review that came out of that report, these are how the board is being, or rather the committees of the board are being restructured so that they respond to the findings of the assessment, but most importantly, so that they align with the new focus areas and the approach that the board is taking. So we then looked at the Committee of Audit and Risk, and we said one of the changes is to make sure that we include governance issues. So this committee not only looks at issues of audit and risk, but in entirety, they look at all the governance issues. Hence, then the name has changed to audit, risk, and governance. And the terms of reference are also being reviewed to make sure that they include the new aspects that have been included. The committee that was a remuneration committee, also around the findings of the assessment, it was identified that this committee has to look at the holistic human capital issues, especially now that the board is focusing on having a high performance organization. So the two committees, which is the human capital as well as audit, risk and governance, those are the two statutory committees that will then assist the board to make sure that they carry the mandate forward in terms of looking at the high performance organization and monitoring or rather overseeing how the high performing organization is working, considering that it's looking at issues of sound, financial governance, issues around digital life services, as well as having the influential team. So they oversee also the organizational redesign that is currently taking place, which will be finalized by the end of November. And then the two committees that will deal with the other two, or rather three pillars of the strategy, which deal with the core, with the content in terms of the core issues, is one, the registration and regulatory compliance. And why the registration and regulatory compliance? It's because in terms of our own analysis and the consultation processes that we've had, it has been highlighted, at least to the board, that issues of registration are at the center of what CIDB does, as well as regulatory compliance, so that we ensure that there is a structure that focuses on how we deliver on the mandate of the CIDB and predominantly on one of our key stakeholders in the industry, which is the contractors in our register. So we then have this committee that's going to focus on those key issues around registration and regulatory compliance. And lastly, a new committee, which is a stakeholder management committee. This basically will oversee the partnerships focus area as well as communication at the CIDB. And obviously in all these committees, the members of the board, various members of the board, are then appointed to various committees. Slide 25, which I've briefly covered, but just to highlight how the new or the review of the committee aligns with the revised strategy. At the top of the strategy, we're looking at the inclusive growing construction industry. So we're focusing on issues of transformation because we believe that it is important for the CIDB to focus on those issues, considering that not much has changed in that particular area. And then the four committees or review committees are then focusing on those issues. So if one looks at the statutory committees, the audit risk and governance, under the high performance organization, they will oversee the sound corporate governance and the sound financial management. Whereas the human capital under the high performance organization will focus on overseeing the knowledgeable and influential team, focusing on human capital issues. And then the registration and regulatory compliance will focus on the pillars of regulation as well as development. And lastly, the stakeholder management on partnerships. And underpinning all of this is to make sure that all our services are digitalized. And lastly, Chairperson, our issues around payments for board members. We use the National Treasury rates. And these are in terms of Category F of the National Treasury's determination for boards. And the rates that are applicable are determined by the Minister of Finance, and they are reviewed annually in April to cater for cost of living adjustments. The rates that we are currently using are that of 2015 because we have not yet received the 2016 rates, and they are shown in that particular slide. I thank you.
Thank you very much to the Chairperson and the Acting CEO for the presentation made. Members, your opportunity for comment and questions. Honourable Kola Bannett, followed by Honourable Sithole, and Honourable Madam Adams, and Honourable Madam Kwani.
Thank you.
Yes,
ma'am, thank you, Chair. I'm interested in the comment by the Chairperson of the Board at the outset that the deregistrations have been stopped while they're being looked into. I wasn't quite sure how you phrased it, because that was such an issue. I'd like you to expand on that if you could, because obviously, to my mind, if a company is in some way found to be behind a criminal activity, if it's a company that built a shopping mall that collapsed, if it's against or breaking many of your crucial regulations, then surely deregistration is a punitive action. So I just needed some to be filled in on that. Also, how long will this moratorium go on for? When is your deadline? I'm sure there may be companies who fail to pay their fee deliberately, and you then, I presume, have to investigate them because they say you don't want to give you the money. They just choose not to. They don't want to pay. So that's a whole other issue. And there are many, as many facetious issues this. But I do fear that a blanket moratorium on deregistrations may see a fly-by-night where one person takes 90% of the tender money and goes off and leaves a little handful of people to build substandard constructions. I've seen RDP houses finished, the contract is paid, and not one of them is connected to any water whatsoever. And people are living in these. So there are issues like that I would like you to address. What is your strategy, your current strategy, or maybe even a long-term strategy in terms or in the face of the clients who do not comply with the CIDB prescripts? How do you deal with this? I mean, do you have teeth? And if so, how do you mash them? And finally, we were told on the 2nd of March that the former CEO had been fired in February 2015. He then challenged it. It went to the Labour Court. The board then was in an awkward position of not being able to appoint anyone. Now, what is the status of the acting CEO? We had a huge issue last time because there were two ladies who'd gone on and off, on and off, and on and off forever doing that position. Can you fill us in there? I mean, I understand it. The courts take their time. There's not much you can do, but I'd like an update. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Tony.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for presentation from the board and the CEO. My mind, Chairperson, is on transformation. Chairperson, I think there's no movement on transformation. No movement, and because if you check the grade 8 and 9, because if you are grade 893 and 447 for grade 8, do you have any strategy to improve this grading? Because actually still there's no movement on that one. And the other one, children, is that of the issue of off-road, nepotism, cronyism, and political interference in the issue of corruption and collusion. Do you have any strategy to deal with that one? And I'm interested to find out about the political interference. Do you have some tangible things that you say there's some, in this collusion, there's some political interference? And the other one, Chairperson, I think the last one is that one of she doesn't downgrade it, downgrading. If that one can be actually unpacked. And then the last one is that one of late payment. Because this one is still an issue. Still a big issue. What mechanism or system that you have actually to monitor and evaluate this late payment? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sitoli. Next was Honorable Adams, followed by Honorable Kupani.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the presentation. My first question, Chairperson, I understand the committee consists of 30 members. That's the most the committee can consist of. Yet there is no deputy chairperson. That means the deputy chairperson must be appointed from within the 30 members. Why wasn't it done yet? Then with regard to slide 4, you know, Chairperson, I find it quite strange that at this stage there must be a skills audit of the board members. DG, when appointing board members, shouldn't they be looked at the abilities that each member can bring to the board? What's really no given in Hartzell Soek for skills? I'm a clear that is. Because we must have the highest skilled person. This is a very, very important board. Thank you, person. On slide 5, high performance. Key areas will be digitalized service. Now, Jefferson, I must admit, I'm also a leak and obstructive and digital system myself. And therefore, I can speak on behalf of persons that can do that. What about the person that cannot enter the digital world? Is will the world have help for them? The small person here in Upington in Leeds that wants to enter. Then, Chairperson, it was quite interesting to look at the common issues on the seven provinces that the board has covered. And they are very, very valid issues. But the one I want to engage with is access to work opportunities. The access to work opportunities. Will there be somebody or some committee that looks at the fact that Patricia Ellis don't get every time a tender or something like that, but that that will be distributed evenly amongst us, especially with the thing of subcontracting also. Then, Chairperson, with regard to the membership of the board, how gender sensitive is that? I would like to hear that. Or we will hear it in the APP, I think. Because I looked at the names and I counted, I think, three ladies. With regard to age, I'd like to hear about that also. There's a code of conduct, Chairperson. How well does the board facilitate the code of conduct? And what inputs did they get when they drafted this code of conduct? Ask that one. And then the very, very last one, Chairperson. Thank you for your indulgence. Why is it necessary, Chairperson, for the outsourcing of the Secretariat Service? Don't you think that is sensitive information that will go to big companies? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ms. Honorable Kopani.
And thank you for the presentation. According to the presentation document, the three things that really the board was doing working since the beginning of this year until now. But Chair, I'm interested to find out in terms of the budget, because they said that sometimes in February they did have a governance workshop that was facilitated by KPMG. If maybe they can tell us how much was spent on that workshop. And secondly, I'm also interested that in May, between April and May, the board also conducted the performance assessment. That was also facilitated by Grant Thornton. If maybe they can tell us how much was that. Chair, according to the presentation, I do understand the reasoning behind the review of the strategic review and everything, because they clearly said that they want to be effective in this type of industry. But and of which it will mainly mean that it is going to be organizational redesign. And according to the Chairperson, many people also, when they will be revised the job evaluation and job grading, people will be moved around. Did you manage to have a consultation with the union, because it might affect the rights of employers also? And of which you do so, there's going to be some instability within the organization. In my view also, Chair, it also says that when you do organizational redesign, it might also, there are cost implications. It's not something that is going to come for free. Did you manage also to put the budget aside for this strategic, this organizational redesign? Is there the budget? How much is it going to cost the board? From there, Chair, I just wanted to find out the last time when the board was here, if maybe they can give us some follow-ups regarding the court cases that was taken, where the minister was taken to court by those companies. How far are you, what is the progress regarding that? Because one of the things that came out very strongly, I think somehow it was indicated that they were saying that the code of conduct is sort of not being, what did they say? I just wanted to check in terms of how did it were vague. Yeah, all those things. How far are you in terms of going forward to address those issues? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member Kopani. Honorable Sultan. Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. I would hope that my apology was conveyed.
That's the pleasure of being a small party. You start here and you end up there. So I said the South Africa Jordan is in the Sports Portfolio Committee. Mrs. Adams has already intimated that there is concern about the outsourcing of the secretary. I will strengthen the question by putting the concern, which is as far as she went, by putting a direct question. Why have you outsourced the secretarial services? There is already concern, you know, conveyed in what she said. Number two, what are the exact functions of the Stakeholder Management Committee insofar as engaging with contractors is concerned? We find that at about every portfolio committee member here, anyone who believes, even the board heads, is concerned about the slow pace of development which underpins, you know, a transformational agenda. Because you have to talk about transformation if there is no definite step-by-step handheld, you know, and holding that's going to take place. You know, that's what I want to know. Because I know that my first reaction when I came into contact with the IDB on a certain Friday evening in November 2014, my question was, out of a staff complement of so many people, couldn't you dedicate just one person who's going to focus exclusively on contractor development? And I was happy when following the year in March, we got a report that at least there was progress in that direction. And that's why I want to know now if, you know, what are the functions of this particular committee? Because I want to see if there is focus on contractor development rather than just being judgmental. How do you propose to deal with negative perception that the majority of contractors have about this AAB? So this comes from a personal experience. I had the opportunity of being at the stakeholder engagement meeting in Isandla last Friday, and I stayed throughout the meeting. They are not just negative, they are hostile, the contractors. They make utterances like, these people are responsible for our downfall. So those are the utterances that they make. So it's not something, I'm not just standing here as a member of the opposition to say that there is that perception. They experienced it themselves. At some stage, I even feared that they, with their own safety, was under threat, DG. And I wish you could convey this to the Honorable, you know, Deputy Minister and Minister. People are just hostile towards the IDB. And that's why I've got this question, Chair. You need to do something about this negative perception. People just see an institution, that, and a lot of people down there know exactly how this institution came to be set up. And I think that's where their negativity towards us. They say, it's an institution that was set up just to keep us down there. And the statistics are not helping, you know, to overcome that perception. So you need to dedicate some time to try and correct the perception once you know you're honestly doing, you know, the speed right underneath, you know. And that's why I put this question to you. Lastly, what does the CIDB actually do to enhance contractor development? And look at your mandate here on slide 13, promote sustainable growth, you know, what do you actually do, you know, in that regard? Maybe this question is linked with my earlier question. For me, the real thing, the real meaning is knowing what steps you actually, concrete steps you actually take to ensure that there is progressive contractor development. Because some of the people were saying, look, we have lost out. I remember one old man from Ontario. He said, I last had a job, and, you know, in 2015, around about August, and I've been without a job. And how do you negotiate with government contracts to make sure that the contractors that are registered with you, you know, regularly, I wouldn't say continuously or continually, you know, what do you do to make sure that they are all kept, you know, in the loop all the time? Thanks for the opportunity, sir. Once more, my apologies for coming in late. Yeah.
Honorable Sultan is understood. Thank you very much. Honorable Mayor Maciel.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And also let me welcome the presentation, which somehow it has touched some of the issues that we have been raising for some time, like the issue of registration, the issue of late payments, and so on and so on. Those are some of the things that we have been raising. When we look at your focus areas, it has already been mentioned that one of them is the transformation which is supposed to take place within the CIDD, and nothing has happened so far. If we look at the company that has been registered, about 88% is still in grade 1. And grade 1 honestly cannot say that person can put any bread on the table. It's a very serious one. And when we look at 8 and 9, those are getting a lot of big, big, big projects. They are at 0.4. So very few of them are in that category. Majority of the people are down there. Which makes sense when you say, we are not going to downgrade them, we want to upgrade them. We want the strategy. How are we going to deal with this issue? To upgrade them, because that is what really is needed. To upgrade them so that they move from one to a better grading. And that will be assisting them and will be clearly addressing the transformation issue. At present, if you receive CIBD, there is someone who's just keep chipping so that no one gets to the top. It's something like it. The digital issue, my colleague has already talked about it. Subcontracting also, that's another major problem to the small businesses. How are we going to regulate this subcontracting? Because in most cases, these people, they make their own deal between themselves and the bigger companies. And the bigger companies get a lot of money, they leave them with nothing. They do the work, they are not even paid at the end of the day. So how am I going to make sure that there is a guideline that will guide these people how the issue of contract is going to be happening? Otherwise, at the end of the day, it doesn't assist the small companies. There must be transfer of skills, but at the same time, they must also be paid for what they are doing. The issue of the suspended CEO has been addressed, I'm sure we'll get started on it. I thought maybe out of the 30 members, one of them will be the secretary. Because if it is the 30, I don't know how the law is saying about that issue of the secretary. But it was because they've been asked also to get started on it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mayor Marcel. I think this is an opportune time to take the agenda from the chairperson and the acting CEO. Where necessary, the DG will come in where the issue is posed in regard to the department. Thank you, sir. Honorable Chair, thank you very much. I'm going to answer some of the questions, and I think the acting CEO is going to take some of the questions. Let me also invite my DG and other senior members of the department, because we work with them on a daily basis, to come in and answer the questions that are appropriate. Honorable Chairperson, the issue that was raised by a number of honorable members here, the matter of downgrading, which I think in my view is linked to matter of transformation and the growth of small companies, in the industry. This is really a burning issue. It's a very difficult issue. You would remember that the matter of grading, it really has always been used as a risk management tool. But I must tell you that this risk management tool, I've already said it, I'm coming from the outside. When I look at it and I analyze it to the details, yes, it got advantages, but overall, this matter of downgrading, the manner in which it's implemented, it is negative. It is negative in as far as encouraging the growth of smaller companies. Yes, I agree that it's a risk management tool, but the negatives are more on that. What do I mean by that? I mean, I think the statistics and the figures are showing
that majority of women-owned businesses, and even youth-owned businesses, and for myself, black-owned businesses, majority, they're not beyond level six. After 21 years of this democracy, I'm not a politician, I saw that, but I'll just say things as they are. It is not acceptable. You can't have that. And when I look at it and I analyze it very closely and also listen to contractors, we are using this downgrading almost as a measure to discourage people to progress. And you see, for instance, somebody get a tender this year of 2 million or 3 million, you know, and then in the next one they complete, in the next 2 years they don't get a tender again. What do? We downgrade them. We don't even go into analyzing why this person, it could be corruption, it could be all sorts of things. So we are saying that, just to answer the question, Sebastian, we have suspended this downgrading from level 1 to level 6 at least. From level 7 to level 9, we are not touching it so far. And we've come up with a committee, as you said, to analyze how do we replace this so that the negatives are outweighed by the positives in terms of the new method of doing this. Without taking away the risk part of it. So that's really, tomorrow we're having a board meeting where the committee will be coming up with a better, hopefully, methodology of doing this. But the idea really is to propel people. Let me also tell you that Honorable Sitani joined us in the Eastern Cape. And people came. The temperature is very high. When we go to Mabato, we're expecting 250 people. 1,000 people, please. When we go to Mpumalanga, 400 people come. 600 people come in Durban. In the Free State, the same number. You know, to me, I look at it, and of course, most of them are angry and all this about corruption and whatever else they're going, because business is also hard. But I look at it and say, this is great for our country. It means people are willing to take risk and become entrepreneurs. So please, you know, as the CIDB at least, let's inform our programs to help these people grow, instead of coming up with negative measures to downgrade them. That's really my philosophy. That's where I'm coming from. A lot of women, a lot of youth, they don't want handouts. They want to work. So as the CIDB, that is why the strategic review and everything else that we have explained, at the bottom of it is to underpin that. And I'm very confident that when we finish with implementing the strategy, we are going to be able to see the companies from grade 1 to grade 6, some of them starting to move to grade 7, to grade 8, to grade 9, with the programs that we are going to implement Chaperson. So it is a matter that we are doing. Now, there's a matter of what we do with clients who do not comply. Honorable member, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one because if you look at the law itself, it's very thin on what is it that the CIDB can do. That is why we're saying, I think it would be good to review that so that it must start as it is. So as it is, you know, we don't really have too much leeway to force them to do anything. We can encourage them, we can coach them, we can help them out in terms of making sure that they comply, but I would really like to see the law having a little bit of teeth around it. Now, there's a matter of the former CEO that was asked. When I came in as a chairperson, I obviously walked into the situation where the CEO was fired, whatever process was used, and to the CCMA, and I think he's now in court. Now, you know, at the end of the day, whether you are a country or a business organization, you are as good as a country or an organization, business organization, as your leader. If you don't have a leader, it's worse. If you have a weak leader, then you're not going to make progress. So we can't have a situation where we don't have a CEO. So I took a responsibility to say, we are going to go ahead and hire a CEO. You know, whatever consequences, we're busy trying to find an amicable way of resolving this. And I must report here that our lawyers and the former CEO's lawyers are busy talking so that we resolve it. As I speak now, they're busy talking. So hopefully that matter will be resolved, and hopefully when we come here next time we'll have either confirmed who would have confirmed the CEO, or yeah, who would have the CEO, let me put it that way. Because you know what, we thought, I mean, I'm non-executive myself, so we need somebody full-time who can take organization forward. Now, the matter of transformation grade 8 and grade 9,
just interested, I take it you've already asked various people to apply, if you, or have you, I'm just interested in whether the acting CEO and perhaps the other lady who was an acting, if they've always been considered. Thank you.
Honourable Member, we advertised, we put the advert in the newspaper, and we advertised internally, we did all what we did, and we had quite very high caliber individuals apply. You know, they have to have a degree plus and an MBA and all that. So that. So we've gone through a very vigorous system. We've interviewed all of them. So we ended up with five, and we also took them to an outside company to be tested in terms of character and everything. So as I indicated, that right now we've given the names to the NIA just to make sure that we are not hiring somebody who says they are and they are not. That's where we are. And per se, if we get a report today, tomorrow we'll announce a CEO. Yeah, that's where we are. Well, it's been like 2 months that we've done it. Now, the issue of, there were issues of fraud, nepotism, and political interference, I think Honorable Member has totally raised it. You see, again, the matter of fraud on the customer side, on the client side, there's not much we can do. As I say, we do need the law to strengthen our hand, then we can do something. Because remember, otherwise we're crossing, we register them, we do what we do, and then they go and tender with whatever, whether it's municipalities and so on. But what happens in those processes and so on, we can't get involved. We would like to get involved, but the law doesn't really give us any way to do so. We love to. So we sympathize, we also cry with them, as a member of the Taneso, we cry with them, but you know, there's not much, unfortunately, we can do. That goes for issues of late prompt payment. Before, you know, I came in, there was a proposal to the department, and the department was very much 100% in support of that. And I think the acting CEO will talk a little bit to that. We would really like to, we are busy with that process again, so that we come up with a proper payment policy, if you like. And right now, we're cooperating and working with Treasury, and we are trying to influence Treasury to include that. Because, you know, if you do the work and you only get paid in 120 days, you can as well shut down your business. It is just not acceptable in my book. It's not. Now, the matter of the follow-up around, there was an issue of the deputy chairperson and the chairperson in terms of the board. Yes, we don't have a deputy chairperson right now. The manner in which the minister intervened last year, I think the DGVA, I wasn't there myself, and they removed the chairperson and the deputy chairperson. I think they were. You would deal with that. Yeah. So we're not that we're not there yet. So he would deal with it. Now the matter of the skills audit of board members and abilities and so on. I share very much what has been said here. My own view is that if you put yourself as a board member, the assumption is that you do understand, you do know what you're doing. That's my understanding. You understand corporate governance, you do have the skills required to be a board member. However, the skills audit, I think the acting CEO will talk to that as well. I think it's part of the corporate governance that from time to time we get an outside view to you deal with it. Access to work, membership of the board, the code of conduct,
somebody asked around the code of conduct and ethical and all that. I think as a board, in terms of even in our strategic session, the matter of matter of running our business, the highest ethical standard is in the center of our business. So we are very much well aware that we need to make sure that our code of conduct is in line with normal corporate governance, King 1, King 2, and King 3. Why is it necessary to outsource this experience? And also just to say that it would be quite extremely abnormal to an extreme to ask a board member to be a secretary of the board. It's really more or less a professional job to do that. So I'm just answering a question around why not the board member being so. So we found a situation where the current secretariat who are doing the secretarial work have been given, I think it's a 3-year contract, maybe we'll talk about that. 1 year. So we are busy reviewing that. So their 1 year has not come to an end. But we've already discussed the board to say that we are going to review that situation. I think it was Honorable Madam Kopane spoke about how much in KPMG, and I think the CEO will talk about that, the OD issues, the acting CEO will talk to that. The follow-up around court cases where industry, threatening and wanting to take us to court, I must report that together with the DG and the minister, we are on top of it. I don't think that we will end up in court now. We're busy resolving this matter, and I think we are coming to an amicable understanding. Our lawyers and their lawyers have been working very hard on that. The other matters that Honorable Sultana raised, the issues of development. Honorable Sultana, we have, as you see in our four pillars, development is one of the things that we're focusing on. And we would be failing in our duty if we cannot help small companies to move from 1 to 6 to 9. It is our intent that we are going to do that. So we're busy with a number of programs. If we had known that we needed to report on this, we'd be giving you a well covered report on all the strategies that we do. So we're busy with it. So really, training and financial help is part of that. There was an issue of the upgrades or higher grading. We've spoken about that. The matter of digital issues, Honorable, yes. We want to make it easier and accessible to the majority of big and small and medium-sized companies to register with us and to renew with us without having to come to our offices. In other words, to do it online, and it can be done. Same as you register with companies on even pay SaaS, that's actually a very simple thing. The way I look at it, we're still really using very old methodologies, so that is why there's a bit of corruption and all that, too many failures in the system. So we're going to get rid of that. However, we will still keep our offices open for people who want to still walk in and do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll just try and cover some of the things that the Chairperson hasn't covered or just add in terms of some of the things that he has covered. I think as a point of departure, just going back to the issue of downgrading and the specific question that was asked, particularly around the fact that would we still look at issues of non-performance and so forth. I think it is important to mention that we have a registration system of contractors that gives you, in terms of our Act, a 3-year license, so to speak. And what the Act then requires is that after 3 years, you must then reapply. And there are certain things that then get to be looked at. when they do that reapplication, the 3-year renewal, the three key things that we currently focus on, remember, there's two things here. The Act prescribes that the CIDP or the board must come up with a method to register contractors, and there must be a 3-year renewal. And then the regulations is where then we unpack how that registration process takes place and so forth. So in the regulation, we put the fact that when contractors do their 3-year renewal, the three key things that we look at when they renew are firstly, your turnover. Secondly, the highest or the largest contract that you've been awarded in the past 5 years. And lastly, we look at the available capital in terms of your financials. So your financials become key, among other documents like your tax clearance and so forth. But your financials then become key and also proof of an award within the past 5 years that you did receive work in government. So those are the three key things that we look at when we do the renewal. So the issue of performance has not been one of those issues. But at the center of this, and this aligns with how the board has approached the new strategy, when you look at the pillar that focuses on issues of registration, what the board has identified is the fact that we need to relook at the registration criteria. Because most of the problems that we may have, for instance, like the downgrading, are as a result of the criteria for registration. Now, what the board has then agreed to suspend is the issue around downgrading. They affect contractors from grade 2 to 9. I'm saying grade 1, no, because you can't downgrade beyond below grade 1. So they affect grade 2 to 9. But our statistics have shown us that they are most prevalent in grades 2 to 6. And that's where most of the SMMEs are. Because in 7 to 9, you have your fully established contractors who always have these things that are needed when we do renewals. So the whole issue of the suspension on downgrading, one, it is specific to grades 2 to 6. So grades 7, 8, and 9 will still be required to give the things that are highlighted, the three items that I highlighted. So what are we saying as an example? If you look at, for instance, the different grades and the tender value limits, we say grade 1 can tender up to 200,000. Grade 2 can tender up to 650,000. Grade 3 can tender up to 2 million, and then the values obviously increase as the grades increase. Now, if one then looks at the three renewals, we start asking questions. In grade 1, grade 2, we don't ask you how much your turnover is. We start asking a question in grade 3, and we say, we need you to have a turnover in your financials of R1 million. Remember, you can tender up to 2 million, but when you come and renew with us, do the three-year renewal, we say we need you to show us in your financials that you have a turnover of at least R1 million. Now, immediately that becomes problematic. The second issue that we look at is the issue of the largest contract that you've been awarded for the past 5 years. We start asking for that information from level 2. We say, grade 2, if you are eligible to tender up to 650,000, show us an award of a contract that has that you've received over the past 5 years that is of value of 180,000. Now, again, we as the CIDB and all of us in the room, we know that in the construction sector, last year alone, 13 billion went back to Treasury because it was not used. And 13 billion went back to Treasury on infrastructure budget that were not used. Now, we know as a CIDB that there is a problem, and this is one of the things that have come up even in our provincial stakeholder liaison meeting. issues around access to work opportunities. Now, it becomes a bit problematic when a contractor then comes to us and they say, I want to renew my grade, and we say, show us proof that you've done work for government. And if they can't, or even the private sector, and if they can't, we say, well, tough, we're going to downgrade you. And these are the questions that have been asked to say, but if I have a chick today and I don't get a job, or I have a degree and I don't get a job for 10 years, does it mean I don't have a degree anymore? Now, the third question that we ask, we say, in your financials, show us that you have available capital to be able to do the work. And we start asking these questions from grade 3. We say, show us a minimum for a grade 3 of 100,000 that you have this capital. Now, it becomes a bit problematic because, remember, we are doing a registration process. It is not linked to you receiving work in government. Remember, the department or the municipality that awards you a contract will still do their due diligence when they award you, when you tender and you are lucky and awarded a project. And at that time, it will then become important for you to show that you will be able to do this job. But it may not be that critical for us when we register you or when you renew your grade. So the board has then looked at this and said, no, this is anti-transformational and anti-developmental, particularly for grade 2 to 6. And that's the majority of where black contractors are sitting. Now, this whole issue of downgrading was then suspended on that basis. And so what it then looks at is to say those three, at least the issues around annual turnover for grade 2 to 6 must not be a deciding factor when you renew your registration. The issues around how much capital you have in your bank must not be a deciding factor for you to renew your registration. But we will look at what awards have you received in the last 6 years. We sort of increase the 5 to 6 in the last 6 years. So we're basically saying you must have done some work as a contractor in the last 6 years. So show us the proof for us to renew you. And we've looked at the limits insofar as that is concerned. So those are the nitty-gritties around what has been considered. And as the chairperson has already mentioned, we now have a committee of the board that predominantly going to focus on issues of registration and regulatory compliance. So how we then move forward long-term is going to be one of the key responsibilities of this committee. That includes mainly the whole issue of overhauling our registration system and criteria. So that's one. On the issue of the short and long-term strategy of the board around non-compliance with our prescripts, particularly by client departments, is a problem area. So one of the things that we are doing is we are in communication with the National Treasury. As we are all aware, the National Treasury has introduced the Central Supplier Database and the e-tender system. Now, one of the things that are a requirement in terms of the e-tender system is that when client departments award contracts, and this includes construction contracts as well, which we were doing as part of our register of projects, which there was no compliance by departments. So client departments are required to advertise the awards in the e-tender system. So one of the things that we are dealing with in terms of our consultations with Treasury, because we are working very closely with them, as it is, we are working on a system that's going to integrate our iTender system with the e-tender system. And iTender was looking at the issue of advertising of tender as well as awards in terms of a registered project. We are now wanting to incorporate that as part of the e-tender so that we make it easier for the contractors to deal and the client departments to deal with one system. So we're looking at issues of integration where we will be able to get this information directly from the e-tender system to our system so that we are able to do our monitoring and evaluation at the CIDB. So it's one of the key things that we are dealing with Treasury in terms of our strategies going forward, to make sure that we deal with issues of non-compliance by clients. But also just to mention that if you look at our mandate as the CIDB, our role is that of promoting uniform application of policy throughout all spheres of government, and also to monitor the performance of the industry. So if we look at the issues around the uniform application of policy across all spheres of government, we do a lot of capacitation to client departments and municipalities and so forth. And now there is a new standard for infrastructure development and procurement management, and the Treasury has introduced, and that standard has incorporated the entire standard for uniformity of CIDB. That looks at issues of capacitation around the public sector, predominantly the public sector. So issues of capacitation of the public sector become key, so that when we deal with issues of compliance with our prescripts, we need to take comfort in the fact that we know we have capacitated, and we are working closely with Treasury insofar as that is concerned. The issues around the slow movement on transformation, if one checks the grading levels of 8 and 9, and what is the strategy to improve it. Honourable Stolle, you would recall, in terms of our transformation summit, where we held the National Stakeholder Forum and we focused on issues of transformation, that we identified 5 factors that need to be focused on insofar as transformation is concerned. And those 5 factors were issues around governance issues. So on governance, you focus on issues around procurement, just the procurement environment of what contractors go through and so forth. We focus on issues of business factors, as well as the business conditions that the contractors operate in. We focused also at a factor, we identified also as a factor the issue around skills competences. And lastly, on the developmental support. So if you then look, for instance, at examples like what the board, the stance that the board has taken around downgrading, it is indirectly talking to issue of addressing transformation. To say, we know it affects this sector the most, so how best can we immediately deliver on it in making sure that there is transformation? You also look at the fact that the new strategy that the board has embarked on, it has taken transformation at the center point of everything, to say, whatever you do in your regulation mandate and what the CIDB is mandated to do, we have to make sure that it is transformative. We have to make sure that it is developmental. And this is another reason why we've also identified the partnerships as a key strategic intervention for us to be able to deliver, because we realize the fact that we cannot do it on our own. We need other partners, other role players to work with us to change the status quo. On issues around, I think the chairperson covered issues around collusion and what the board is doing. On issues around downgrading, I already explained. And late payments is another one that we are dealing, we are working very closely with Treasury in dealing with that. But having said that, I think it is also important to mention that some of the shortcomings in the performance of the CIDB are as a result of our own legislation, the CIDB Act, which the Department of Public Works, working with us as the CIDB, are currently reviewing. Because if I may give an example, for instance, in terms of our code of conduct, which is the specific document that was challenged when we started dealing with the issue of collusion, was, but where are you giving these powers to the Act, because they are in your code of conduct? So immediately, they then cause problems for us, because it limited us. So it's one of the issues that are key as we review the Act, to say that most of the things, our Act is very thin in terms of the powers of the CIDB, which is why in a lot of cases we are asked, do you actually have teeth as the CIDB? So what we've done over the years as the CIDB, we've tried to introduce or to enforce these teeth through regulation.
and that is what has been challenged. The recent legal opinion that we even received from the state law advisor was around the whole regulation that we're trying to put in place around delayed payments. And the question was, but does the minister have this power in terms of the act? And the other questions that are asked is, but isn't the PSMA sufficient enough when it says 30 days must adhere to? So what more do you then put in place as a CID? So these are some of the things that we are looking at as we deal with the issues of revising even our legislation, the CIDB Act.
Can we just pause there, madam? I suggest that we take a 15-minute break for tea and be back at 25 past 11. Thanks.